Good morning to all of you, and a guten Erev Shabbos. It's really a pleasure to spend time learning with you, and really to connect with those on the other side of this country is always a great pleasure, and especially when it's for the purpose of Limud HaTorah. So George always asks that I try to share something about the weekly Parsha, and for this week, it's a difficult challenge, not because there's nothing to talk about, but rather because there is so much to talk about. Parshas Bahalosa is just so replete with so many interesting stories and so many different facets of halacha and hashkafa that we can discuss. What I wanted to focus on is something that appears at the very end of the parsha, and that is, as we all know, Miriam HaNeviah says some kind of lashon hara against her brother Moshe Rabbeinu, and as a result of that, she's punished, and she's inflicted with saras. Moshe Rabbeinu then, in turn, offers a tefillah. Happens to be, it's a very unusual tefillah. All he says is five words, Kel na rifa na la. And from there, there's a lot of discussion that we can launch into about the parameters of praying, of davening for a chola. Unfortunately, this is something that comes up every so often in many of our lives. Sometimes for a family member, sometimes for somebody who we care deeply for, sometimes for a person who we don't even know. We get an email, we get a text that somebody's sick and they can use our tefillah. And I just wanted to use this morning's time to talk a little bit about the parameters of tefillah for a chola and just highlight a few very interesting aspects. So number one, there's a comment of the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim writes the following, Yesh mispalel al acheirem v'nenet. There are some who daven for others and they are actually answered. Val atzmo eno nene. And yet, when I daven for myself, let's say I am in need of a parnasa, I am in need of a shidduch, I am in need of a refuah, I'm in need of all kinds of things. Sometimes I can daven for somebody else and it seems like it works. And sometimes I daven for myself and it doesn't work. And this is mystifying. And the system is almost impossible for us to comprehend. But says the Sefer Chassidim, that doesn't deter a person from being involved, from offering a tefillah on behalf of another person, because you never know. In fact, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, Kavei al Hashem, Chazak v'yameitz libecha v'kavei al Hashem. And the Gemara learns, if you dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu for some kind of Yeshua, for some kind of need that you have in your life or in somebody else's life, and you see that simply the tefillah is not working, what is the response, what is the reaction? Well, when I ask my parent or my close friend for a favor, and I ask once, and they say, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Then I ask a second time, and a third, and a fourth. I assume at some point they're just going to block my phone number. They don't want to hear from me so many times about the same thing. They already said no, they considered it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu works very differently. And the Gemara says, Kavei al Hashem, you pray, you reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then when you don't feel that you have been satisfied with the answer, when you don't feel that you have been responded to, Chazak v'yameitz libecha v'kavei al Hashem, what you do is, you ask again, which is not what we would have done to another human being, to a person who we feel close with, but yet, that is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu works. So the whole system of tefillah is somewhat mystifying, and yet the Sefer Chassidim writes, Avon b'pnei sheYisrael arevim zeh lazeh, because Jews care very much about each other, therefore, lakach kishatzar ba'al echad, although we don't fully understand the process, we don't really understand how it works and when it works and when perhaps it does not work, when we know that there's a tzara that's coming on another individual, chayavim kulam lehitztar ulehispalo. We all have an obligation to offer a tefillah, even though we don't fully understand how that's going to pan out. And so much so that the Sefer Chassidim ends off by saying, im lo hayam ispalo, if you would not offer a tefillah, if you're so callous and insensitive to a person who's struggling, who's suffering, says the Sefer Chassidim Hayachote. He quotes a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel that mentions the fact that a person who hears about a tzara befalling another person and doesn't bother to offer a tefillah, it's almost as if you are violating a sin. Now this causes a major issue today because, as we know, everybody's on all kinds of WhatsApp groups and they send out things all the time, almost every day. This one's sick, that one's sick, this one needs a Yeshua. We can't even keep up anymore. So I find it very difficult to really keep up with all the different messages that I get. If it's somebody that writes to me that I know, that I understand what the situation is, I'll take down the name and I'll daven. You know, unfortunately, there are so many cholim, so many people with needs, we can daven Shmona Esrei all day and night if we're just mentioning all their names. Otherwise, I just mentioned in the Refuah Shleima, when you say the tefillah for Refuah Shleima, you just say, B'soch Sha'ar Cholei Yisrael. And this way you incorporate all of those who are in need, and you really mean it. I do mean it. I mean it very sincerely. Unfortunately, I'm unable to enumerate each one by name. I'm unable to really specify who it is that I'm talking about. But we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only to focus on those that we are close with, but also to think about all Holy Israel. There's a very interesting comment of the Rambam. The Rambam is in Hilchos Avel. Why is it in Hilchos Avel? This is not a halacha that really relates to Avelus at all. It just so happens to be that when the Rambam talks about Avelus, he doesn't start with the death. The Rambam says before somebody dies, normally what happens is they get sick. And when they're sick, we have parameters and we have laws and we have etiquette of how we're supposed to deal with somebody who is sick and how we're supposed to be mevaker cholah. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Avel, Perek Yud Dalet Halacha Vav, Hanichnas Levaker Asacholah. I'm sure all of us have gone at some point in our lives to be mevaker cholah, to visit somebody who is sick. The Rambam writes a whole bunch of regulations. Number one, the Rambam says, Lo Yeshev Al Gabi Hamita. Don't sit above the cholah, because then he's going to have to move his head in an uncomfortable position to be able to communicate with you. So the Rambam says, just try to be mindful, try to be cognizant of what it is for the cholah to communicate with you, to have the opportunity to speak with you and to see you, and make sure that you don't make him uncomfortable in the way that you posture yourself. So the Rambam says that. Then he says, you shouldn't sit l'mala mirashosav ela mis'atef v'yoshev l'mata mirashosav. You should sit humbly in a comfortable place. And then the Rambam adds something fascinating. Mevakesh alav rachamim v'yotze. Says the Rambam, you go to the choleh, and you provide the choleh with everything he needs, and you bring food, and you bring drinks, and you make sure they're comfortable, and you move the bed around, and you sweep the floor, and you change the linens, and you do everything that needs to be done. But then, the Rambam says you're not done yet. The Rambam then adds, Mevakesh alav rachamim, before you leave the room, you have to offer a tefillah. You have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rachmanis for this person. Now, sometimes that will make a choleh very uncomfortable. You stand right in front of them, and you offer a tefillah. You say, 1 second, before I leave, I just need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rachmanis for you, that you have to assess the situation and see if the cholah is going to be uncomfortable. You don't do that. I can say with my father, I've been to many, many places to be mevaker cholah with him, and there were times when we saw that it was very uncomfortable to offer a tefillah. It was uncomfortable to just move off to the side of the room and say something. So as we left the room, my father stood outside the door. You know, when you're in a hospital room, sometimes the doors have curtains on them and you can't really see through. So my father would offer a tefillah as we left the room, because he didn't want to do it in front of the individual, him or herself. Now, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Hilchos Avelus as well. And the Shulchan Aruch writes also a whole bunch of rules and regulations about how we are supposed to be mevaker cholah. Writes the Shulchan Aruch, Ein mevaker nacholah, you're not allowed to do biker cholah in the first 3 hours of the day. Why not? It's convenient for me. I'm on my way to work. I want to stop off in the hospital. Why shouldn't I go in the first 3 hours of the day? Now, by the way, if that's the only time you're going to be able to go, and you're not going to have the opportunity to go later because you come home from work 7, 8 o'clock at night and the cholah is already sleeping or tired, okay, that's a different story. But the Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch is quoting, that if you have an option to go at any time in the day, don't go in the first 3 hours. Why not? So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch explain the reason why is because normally after a person gets a good night's sleep and they're up in the morning, they feel much better than they feel later on as the day progresses. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, if you're going to see the person right after they wake up in the morning and they just took a shower and they put themselves together and they look much better than they really feel, says the Shulchan Aruch, Lo yachush levakesh alav rachamim. You're not going to think that a tefillah is necessary, because you're going to say, look, the person looked much better than I thought. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, in the opposite direction as well, don't show up to the hospital at 11 o'clock at night. Number one, because it's very uncomfortable for the staff when they have to put up with visitors so late at night when everyone's trying to sleep. Number two, if the cholah wants to go to sleep, you shouldn't keep the cholah up. But leaving that aside, let's say you have a cholah who's up at night and who would be okay with a visitor. Writes the Shulchan Aruch, it's probably not a good idea to visit late at night. Why? The Shulchan Aruch says, because normally at night we're much more exhausted, we're much more worn out. And the Shulchan Aruch says, if you see a person in that stage, yisyayish milavakish alav rachamim, you're going to think the condition is much worse than it is, and then you won't offer a tefillah because you're going to say, my tefillah won't help. So the Shulchan Aruch again frames the whole mitzvah of Biker Cholim surrounded on this issue of when you're going to offer the best tefillah. You're not going to offer the best tefillah in the morning, you're not going to offer a good tefillah at night, and therefore it's good to go during the day. And what you see clearly from this is, although sometimes we go to great lengths and we put a lot of expense and a lot of thought and time and consideration into visiting a chole, into doing what's necessary to make the person feel comfortable, and we'll buy a game and a puzzle and a book and a whatever it is that will make the person feel more comfortable, and all of that is important, and all that is an aspect of Bikur Cholim. Still, what's clear from the Rambam is, and the Shulchan Aruch writes the same, that the whole crux of the mitzvah is just to be able to bring us to a point where we'll feel the need to offer a tefillah. So much so that the Rambam says, somebody who is mevaker chole and does not offer a tefillah, the Rambam writes, lo kiyem mitzvaso. You have not fulfilled your mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. This is such a critical component of this entirety of the mitzvah. So that I find to be very, very important, because I think most people probably don't think that way. Most people really don't consider that. Actually, once we're on the topic of Bikur Cholim, somebody called me last week, and it's a shaila I've gotten many, many times before. It's a very unfortunate shaila, and that is that at the end of life, we all know, sometimes when you have a chole and they're nearing their end, so we know that the right thing to do is to say vidui. But this person called me last week and said that a relative of theirs was at the very end stage of life, and they felt that it was appropriate to say vidui, but they said they were nervous, because if you're going to say vidui, the patient's going to get scared, and maybe that's going to make them more uncomfortable. So that's a shaila that unfortunately we're asked all the time, and my father has told me many times that if in any way you feel that this is going to bring down the moral wherewithal of the patient, and it's going to, morale, if it's going to bring down the strength of the patient, and it's going to bring down their ability to fight against the illness, because they're going to say, look, the family gave up on me, they're already saying vidui, then absolutely you should not. And my father always says, you should go off to the side, say vidui on behalf of the patient, say vidui on their behalf, but don't scare them. If you feel that this is going to be something that will get them afraid, if it's something that's going to scare them, again, you might want to talk to them. My father said, at the very end of my grandfather's life, he never had a problem saying vidui. And my father, when I asked him why, he told me the reason why is because every time my grandfather went in for any procedure, any time they were putting him under anesthesia, anything he had done for the last 20 years of his life, he always said vidui before. And therefore, he wasn't afraid. He said vidui. He said, what do I have to lose? It's always good to be misvada. It's always good to do tshuva. Whether this is going to be the last opportunity for me to do it or not, doesn't matter. So when you have it in that kind of frame of mind, and that's the way maybe you present it to a chole, maybe it sounds a little less frightening. You say to the chole, look, you know, it's always good to do tshuva. When a person is suffering, it's certainly a appropriate time to do tshuva. And this has nothing to do with the end of your life. It has nothing to do with the fact that your end is nearing. I certainly think that we need to be very careful when unfortunately faced with having to present that aspect of the end of life procedure. Anyway, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos a very interesting line when we talk about being mispalel al chole. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos lamedalad meralav kala mevakish rachamim al chaveiro. If you are offering a tefillah on behalf of your friend, on behalf of somebody you know, ein sar sheyazke lo shem. You don't need to mention the name of the chole. Really? Why don't you mention the name of the chole? And the Gemara learns that from a pasuk in this week's Parsha. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu offers a tefillah in Parshas Bahaloscha, when he offers a tefillah on behalf of his sister, he does not mention her name. All he says is, Kel na refa nala. All he offers a tefillah is asking our Kodesh Baruch Hu to please give a refuah, to please grant a medical refuah to his sister. But he doesn't say who she is. Below his kirshmashal Miriam. Miriam's name is not mentioned. And therefore, the Gemara says from here we learn, when you daven for a chole, you don't mention their name. So much so there's a machlokas or rishonim, doesn't mean you're not allowed to mention their name, or it means you just don't have to. The Chasam Sofer writes, it would be a good idea not to mention the name of the chole. Why? Because he says, unfortunately, everybody has a kitrug against them. We've all done things wrong throughout our lives. Everybody knows we're not perfect human beings. Everybody knows what their cheshbon ha-nefesh is or is not. If I'm going to mention the name of the chole, writes the Chasam Sofer, you're just going to bring up a kitrug against the person in Shamayim. And we don't want to do that. It's the last thing we want to do when we're offering a tefillah on their behalf. And therefore the Chasam Sofer says, that's why some of the Rishonim said, the Gemara means dafka, do not mention the name of the chole, because that could bring about some kind of negative response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, I'm sure many of you are wondering, we've been to shul before, we all know that we make a mishabera for a chole, and we say their name, so how can that be? We're going against the Gemara. That's an issue that's raised by none other than the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham is in Hilchos Tfilah, Simen Kuf Yud Tes, and that's right where it belongs, because this has to do with our tefillah, this is something we encounter all the time, and the Magen Avraham says, hey, one second, the Gemara here says You're not supposed to mention the name of the chola, and yet we all know that although Moshe Rabbeinu didn't mention the name of his sister, we all go to shul, we make a mishaberach, we have a long list of people, people stand up, they give names in our own Shmona Esrei, we mention people's names. How come suddenly the Gemara tells us not to do that? Why has our minhag developed otherwise? And the Magen Avraham comes to the following conclusion. The reason why is because it depends. It really depends whether or not the chola is bifaneinu. If the chola is in front of me, if I'm davening in the room of the chola, or the chola is in my house, and I offer a tefillah, it's very obvious, it's very clear who it is that I'm davening for, and there's no need to mention the name. Moshe Rabbeinu went to visit his sister. He sees her condition, he understands how severe it is, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kel na refan na la, there's no reason to mention her name, he's standing right in front of her. On the other hand, writes the Magen Avraham, if I'm going to be somewhere else, which normally is the case, if I'm going to be in shul, and I'm going to be offering a tefillah on behalf of a chole, then I need to mention who it is that I'm davening for. It's not obvious to anybody who it is that I'm praying for. And therefore, the Gemara says that although we are told from Moshe Rabbeinu that you don't mention the name, the Magen Avraham says that is only when it's a situation of chole bifaneinu, when the chole is in front of us. But if the chole is not here, then we would have to mention the name. And what is the reason why we have to mention the name when the chol is not in front of us? The reason why is because the Zohar HaKadosh makes a comment in Parshas Vayishlach, where Yaakov Avinu is afraid, he's terrified of his brother, and he says, Hatzilenina miyad achi miyad Esav. And the Zohar HaKadosh says, why does he have to give so many details? Save me from my brother, who happens to be Esav. Why doesn't he just say, save me from my brother? He has no other brother. And the answer, writes the Zohar HaKadosh, is whenever we offer a tefillah, it is best to specify as much as possible. We should individualize the tefillah as much as we can. So Yaakov Avinu, when he's offering a tefillah on his own behalf, he says, save me from my brother, save me from Esav, even though it's the same thing. But it gives more of a specificity to what he's saying. And therefore we say that from there we learn that whenever we are offering a tefillah, we should do the very same. We should be as specific and detailed as possible. The Chasam Sofer has a beautiful vort where he writes, Yitzchak Avinu goes off to the side to daven for his wife. As we know, Yitzchak is confronted by his wife, and she's complaining about the fact that she doesn't have a child, and she wants Yitzchak Avinu to daven. And the pasuk says, "Vayetar Yitzchak lenochach ishto." Yitzchak davens in front of his wife. What do you mean he davens in front of his wife? Why? We find the first time that Yitzchak goes out to daven, it's Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. Yitzchak finds that the best place for him to have meditation, to clear his thoughts, is to go out into the field and to focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how come all of a sudden when it comes time to daven, for the most important thing in his life, he wants to have a child, suddenly he doesn't go outside? Why is he davening in the living room with his wife? Why doesn't he go out to the field with his wife? And the answer is, says the Chasam Sofer, because Yitzchak was afraid if he would offer a tefillah in the field without his wife being there, he would have to mention the name of her parents. As we all know, her parents were not righteous people. Her parents were Rishayim. And Yitzchak didn't want to offer the name of a Rasha in a tefillah. So how is he going to circumvent the problem? How is he going to daven for his wife while at the same time not mention her parents' name? And the answer to that, writes the Chasam Sofer, is daven in the presence of your wife. And if he davens in her presence, then it's clear that the tefillah is directed toward her. He doesn't have to mention her name at all. And the Chasam Sofer writes that is based on this Magen Avraham. And because of this idea, the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in the Halicha Shlomo, sometimes, you know, at least in our shul, I don't know how it goes by you in San Diego, but sometimes in our shul, they'll get up after davening and they'll say, you know, somebody is having a procedure today and we're going to recite Tehillim on their behalf. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thinks that the more proper thing to do is, when you make that announcement, you should say, Yitzchak ben Rivka, or you should say, whoever it might be is the chole, him or herself, you should mention their name before the Tehillim. And you should say, we are davening on behalf of this specific individual, because that's what we learn from this comment of the Magen Avraham, that you're supposed to specify as much as you can, as we find by Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayishlach, by Hatzilenina Miyad Achi Miyad Esav. Now, the Stipler writes in his Sefer, Orchus Rabbeinu, what do you do about a situation where you simply don't know the person's name? Let's say, for example, you hear that there's a great tzaddik who happens to be very sick. You hear about a very prominent person. I remember when I heard that Rabbi Jonathan Sacks was sick. I didn't know how to be mispallel for him because I didn't know his Hebrew name. I don't know his mother's name, but I do know that he's a prominent person. I know that his name is Jonathan Sacks. So the Stipler writes, if you have somebody like that, You can just say their English name. Say whatever you know. Say the identifying characteristics. Not only that, he writes that when Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky was sick, he was one of the great Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, when Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky was sick, he didn't really know his full name, but he didn't want to ask any of the family members because it was an uncomfortable conversation. So he offered in his tefillah, he said, I hope that the one who wrote the Chazon Yecheskel, which is the monumental work of Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky, he said, I hope that the author of the Chazon Yecheskel will have a refuah shleima. So if you don't know the name of the choleh, you should just offer some other identifying detail about their personality that will make it clear who you are davening for in particular. Now, it is something very interesting that when you daven for a choleh, you'll notice that we mention the name of the father and we do not mention the name of the mother. What is that all about and why do we do that? That's a very interesting observation. That suddenly we mention the name of the father. I'm sorry, we mention the name of the mother, and we do not mention the name of the father. And that is based on a Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Daf Samachei Amud Beis, where the Gemara says whenever you're davening for some kind of need, you should mention the person's name and the name of their mother. Where does that come from? Well, the Zohar HaKadosh writes that it comes from David HaMelech, that David HaMelech, when he's offering a tefillah on behalf of himself, he says, Ani Abdecha Ben Amasecha. He says, I am your servant, the child of your maidservant. I'm the child of my mother. And because of that, because of the way David HaMelech structured and formulated his tefillah, that is the way that we structure the tefillah as well. Now the question is, why? Why did David HaMelech do that? Why don't we mention the father, who normally, let's say when any of us would be called up for an aliyah, we would be called up by the name of our father. Most of us have a last name that comes from our father, not from our mother. There are some, nothing to do with feminism, there are some who have it the other way. My father always says that that there were many great Gedolim who went by the name of their mother for whatever reason. They came from a more prominent family, they wanted to remember that lineage, that heritage, whatever it might be. Sometimes you have a situation like that, but most of the time we are identified by our fathers and not necessarily by our mother alone. So why is it that here we find an exception to the rule? And the answer the Achronim deal with is a varied answer. There are many different answers to this question, but one of the Achronim says the answer is because when you think about a father and a mother, and again, this is before DNA testing, when you think about a father and a mother, which one do we know with certainty is really the parent? The Gemara says you can never know for sure that this is the father. The Gemara says we have an assumption that when you have a married couple who has a child, we have an assumption that the child was probably born from this man. Now, we know with certainty that this is the mother. Why? Because we were there when the child was born. So there's one parent who we know with certainty is the parent. There's one parent who we assume is the parent. And therefore therefore the Achronim say, when we're supposed to specify a tefillah as much as we possibly can, we want to say the person who we know with certainty is really the parent. That is the most specific you can get. And therefore we say the person and the name of their mother as opposed to the name of their father. Now, Reb Nevensal has a comment where he asked Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if that's the case, isn't it strange that when we offer a tefillah on someone's behalf, if they are a Kohen or a Levi, we're going to insert that into the tefillah? Why do you say that? That's like a contradiction in terms. On the one hand, you're saying, this is the child of Mrs. So-and-so, HaKohen or HaLevi. What do you mean HaKohen or HaLevi? The Kohen or Levi comes from the father, not from the mother. So that's just a very interesting insight, a very interesting observation that Reb Nevensal had. And I'm not exactly sure what the answer to that is. There's a very interesting Gemara Maseches Bechoros as well, where the Gemara tells us that on one occasion, the Chachamim decided that they were going to do a dissection of a body. And they were going to actually try to figure out what is happening in the anatomy of a human body. There was a woman who the Gemara says was Chayiv Misa, not by the Jewish law. The local municipality, for whatever reason, had decided that this woman was deserving of the death penalty. And after she was killed, the Chachamim thought that this was a good opportunity for them to have an understanding of how the human body works. And they dissected the body and they tried to figure out all the different parts. And the Gemara says they came to the conclusion that there were 252 parts of the female body. Now, it's very well known that there are Ramach Evarim, that there are 248. And the Chachamim came to the conclusion here that when we deal with a woman's body, there are more than 248. There are 252. And this is a very interesting issue that is raised by the Minchas Elazar. The Minchas Elazar was the Munkat Shereb, and he has a very interesting shuva where he says, there is an age-old custom that when we say Kriya Shema, we should make sure that we have 248 words in order to be Keneged the Ramach Evarim. Now, if I'm davening with a tzibur and I hear the words Hashem Elokeichem Emes at the end, that makes it out to 248, because there are only 245 words in Kriya Shema. But what about if I'm davening b'yichidus? So we all know that the minig is, you say, Kel Melech Ne'aman. You add three words in the beginning of Kriya Shema in order to make up for those three missing words, which will then bring you to 248. Fine, sounds wonderful. Writes the Minchas Elazar, would that change if we're dealing with a woman? If a woman is davening at home, is there any reason for her to say Kel Melech Ne'aman? When, after all, even if she says those three words, it's only going to add up to 248, which is not 252. And that's an interesting question. I found that fascinating. When we talk about Ramach Evarim, the Gemara assumes that's only for a male. When we deal with the female anatomy, the assumption of the Gemara is that there are 252 Evarim. Again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know whether or not this corresponds to anything in medicine. But you can do your own homework, your own research, but that's what the Gemara says. And the problem that we come to is, in the Nusach, of the Mishabera for Achola, we say, we offer a tefillah l'ramach evarav u'shesagida. We say that the 248 limbs should have a refuah shleima. Aye, 248 limbs. What happens if you're dealing with a woman? If you're being mispalo for a nekeva, if you're being mispalo for a woman who's not well, you're only davening that 248 of her limbs should be well. What about the other few that are left? We don't mind if those have a problem? Of course we mind. That would be a terrible thing. So how do we offer such a tefillah? So it happens to be, Rav Shlomo Kluger writes in a tshuva that maybe the answer is that when we say in the tefillah, we say Mishaberach Abaseinu Abraham, Yitzchak Yaakov, Moshe Yaron David Shlomo, we're asking in the schus of the Ramach Evarim of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe Yaron David Shlomo, that we ask that they have, that this chola has a refuah shleima. That's a little bit hard to understand, because if you read the actual nusach of the Mishaberach for a chola, it doesn't sound that way at all. It sounds like we're offering a tefillah that the Ramach Evarim of this person should have a refuah shleima. And that's where Moshe writes in a tshuva in our Achayim Chelek Dalet, in the Igros Moshe, that perhaps the more proper, the more correct nusach that we should say is, if we're davening for a male, we should say, l'ramach evar v'shesag gida. If we're davening for a female, we should say, l'chol evareh l'chol gideh. We should say, for all of her limbs, because it's not ramach, and that would not be the proper calculation. So Moshe says, that's why we should change the nusach a little bit, if we're dealing with a female, as opposed to being mispalel for a male who might be ill. Let me just close this section of the shir. I know you like to have 30 minutes of halacha and then 10 minutes of hashkafa on the parsha. So let me just close this part with a very interesting observation, an interesting point that was made by the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe, the Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, was a great gadol, a great Talmud Chacham, and he was a contemporary of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So on one occasion, I'm sure on many occasions, they found each other at a wedding together, at a simcha, and the Satmar Rebbe turned to Rav Moshe, and they were having a whole conversation. And Rav Moshe turned to him and he said, you know, you're a Rebbe, maybe I can ask you this question, maybe you'll understand. How come when we offer that somebody should have a refuah, we say you should have a refuah shalema? We say you should have a complete refuah. What do we mean shalema? What's that all about? So that was an interesting question. So the Satmar Rebbe turned back to Rav Moshe Feinstein and he said, you know, I understand, I appreciate your question, but let me ask you, great Rosh Hashiva, why is it that when we talk about the process of tshuva, we say, "Ba'atzireinu b'tshuva shleima lefanecha"? What is a tshuva shleima? Either you did tshuva or you didn't do tshuva. What does tshuva shleima mean? What does it mean, a complete experience of tshuva? So Rav Moshe answered, and he said that the Rambam says, what does it mean to do tshuva in the real way? What is the greatest experience of tshuva? The Rambam says, tshuva means I have remorse, I have charata, I feel terrible for what I did, so much so that I bring myself to the point, sheyad alav yodea talumos, that God himself, who knows all secrets in the world, would be able to be made on me, would be able to give testimony on me, shelo yashu bezeh hachet liyola. If you want to know what is the highest level of tshuva, the highest level of tshuva is a person who can say with confidence, I will never bring myself to do this mistake again. This problem in my life will never repeat itself, and that is the ultimate experience of tshuva. And said Rav Moshe, that's what we mean when we say, Hachzireinu b'tshuva shleima. Not just that I should have remorse, not just that I should feel bad, I should have regret, and I should repair my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of that is wonderful. But outside of that, we need something more. Outside of that, we also ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should have the opportunity to do tshuva shleima. Shleima means a shleimus, a perfect tshuva, that I should never come back to doing this mistake again. And based on that, the Satmar Rebbe said, maybe that's what it means when we ask for a refuah shalema. Refuah shalema means, we don't just want that a person should have something which is a temporary fix. We don't just want a band-aid on the problem. We want to offer a tefillah that they should have a refuah shalema, which means that never again should they have to worry about this problem in their lives. Never again should they be inflicted with this issue that they are overcoming now. That is what it means, a tshuva shlema. That is what it means, a refuah shlema. And based on that, maybe that's what it means as well, when we ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu send us a geula shlema. We have many temporary geula that we go through in our lives. Sometimes you need a yeshua, sometimes you need this, you need that, and you get whatever it is that you need, or something gets worked out, but later on, it kicks down the line, and later on it comes back again. And we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no. When we ask for a geula, we don't just want a temporary reprieve. We don't just want a temporary fix to a problem that we have. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go all the way. We ask the Ribono Shel Olam to give us a geula shlema, that the Ribono Shel Olam should give us a complete and total redemption from all of our suffering, from all of our problems, that never again should we have to face them, that never again should we have to confront any of them, and we should be able to overcome them all. Let me just say a comment on this week's parsha, and that is something that I find extremely important. It's no secret to any of us that we're living through a very difficult time right now. And Jews all over the world, I need not tell anyone who lives in California that there are anti-Semitic attacks that are going on all over the place. I live in New York. There are things happening here. There are things happening all over this country. It's a country where we felt very safe just a few weeks ago, and a country where I would venture to say most religious Jews didn't even have to think twice about whether or not they would wear a yarmulke on the streets when they go to work or when they're in their office buildings. And yet today, we have so many people who are afraid, who are terrified, because they don't know what price they're going to pay for identifying as a Jew. Let me just mention something in that regard, and that is, you look at this week's parsha, as we mentioned, Moshe Rabbeinu offers a tefillah on behalf of his sister. And it's very strange. He only offers a tefillah of five words. Kel na refan na la. Imagine Rahman al-Itzlan, one of our siblings, one of our closest family was not well, one of our children was not well. How much do you think you would pour your heart out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Five words is the best that Moshe Rabbeinu can do? There's nothing more or less that he can say? All Moshe Rabbeinu could do is say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give her a refuah. That's it? Why don't you stand and daven along Shemona Esrei? Why don't you do what has to be done and communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a meaningful way? And Rashi on Chumash asked this question. Rashi on Chumash quoted in Gemara answers, the reason why is because this is not a time to be marach b'tefillah. There are times in our lives, obviously tefillah is a critical component to all of our success in life. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement is something that we need at every juncture of our lives, and we need to ask Him to be intimately involved in all that happens in our lives. However, we need to remember that there are times in our lives when tefillah is not sufficient. Tefillah is not the only answer. Moshe Rabbeinu here understands this is not the appropriate time to be marach b'tefillah. The appropriate thing for me to do right now is to offer a short tefillah, but then to actively engage, to get involved, and to do something proactively to save my sister's life. Somebody's in the ICU, you can't just stand there and offer a tefillah. It's wonderful to offer a tefillah, and you have to do that also. But there's something more that's needed as well. The Chazon Ish has an amazing comment where he says, imagine you have an individual who sees a young child drowning in a swimming pool. Rachmana litzlan, lo aleichem v'lo aleinu. We should never have such a thing. But you have every so often, such a terrible story, a young child falls into a swimming pool and drowns. So imagine you see somebody who's drowning in a pool, doesn't know how to swim. And you see this and you start crying and you're hysterical, terrible thing, and you move off to the side and you start chuckling and you're crying and you're saying to yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save this child, please, please. And you're offering a 5-minute Shemona Esrei, a 6-minute Shemona Esrei, a set, 10, 15 minutes to heal him, you're crying. By that time, the child is dead. The Chazon Ish writes, you don't have the option of offering a tefillah then. To offer a tefillah then, writes the Chazon Ish, would be an iser for you to do. What you need to do at that moment is to jump into the water, put your hands in, roll up your sleeves, and get yourself into the situation. Be proactive. Do what needs to be done immediately and extricate that child from the danger. Take the child away from the horrific situation that is unfolding. You cannot offer a tefillah at that moment. It would be the most inappropriate and senseless thing to do. What you need to do then is get involved and be proactive and do what needs to be done immediately before something gets worse. Writes the Chazon Ish. But however, imagine you have a lifeguard who's there who already jumped in the pool. And I'm just standing on the side watching this and watching them take care and watching the CPR. That's when you offer a tefillah, when everything else is being done, when there's nothing more that I can do, yes, that's when I offer a tefillah. That's my involvement, that is how I engage in whatever it is that's going on. I would say is that there are times in our lives when tefillah is the answer, when tefillah is the only answer. Tefillah always needs to be a critical component to everything we do in our lives, but we also need to remember there are times in our lives when HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects more of us. There are times in our lives when the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to stand up and proactively do something, to proactively engage, to be Jews who live lives with pride, who live lives where we are so excited about our involvement, about what it is that we do, about what it is that we represent, about what it is that we stand for. You know, there's somebody who came to shul a few days ago when the whole terrible situation in Eretz Yisrael was unfolding. And he said, you know, after davening every day, we say two kapit l'tehillim. He said, this is not about tehillim. And I said to him, you're correct. You're correct. Saying two kapit l'tehillim is the least we can do. You're right. We can't not say tehillim. We need to say tehillim. However, that's the least we should be doing. There is so much more advocacy that is required, that is expected of us. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu teaches in our parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu tells all of us, there are times in our lives when we survey, when we look at a situation, and our automatic and knee-jerk response is to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, Ribbono Shel Olam, save us, do something to get us out of this terrible predicament. And that is obviously something that is very important for all of us to do, and we always need to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the linchpin for everything good, for everything that happens in our lives, and the only way that goodness will come, or that Yeshua will be provided, is if HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides it should be so. However, don't think that our job stops there. We need to remember, as Moshe Rabbeinu taught us in this week's Parsha, that is not the only answer. There is so much more that is required. There is so much more that is expected. And at times like this, when the Jewish people are in such peril, there is something that all of us have the opportunity to do. Send letters to your congressman, to your congresswoman, sign petitions that are going to fight against anti-Semitism, whatever it might be, support Eretz Yisrael, give money to the causes that you know are really worthwhile, are really going to make a difference. If you don't know how to make a difference, you know people who know how to make that difference. And that is our charge, that is our challenge, that is what Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us in this week's Parsha, and it's so relevant to the situation that we are facing today. I thank you all once again for joining. It's always a great pleasure to learn Torah together. I thank the Rosh Kollel, Reb Jonathan, for inviting me in. I know that this is your platform, it's your podium. I thank you, George, for putting this group together and having this meaningful experience. And I know it's early in the morning for all of you. You still have to daven Shacharis, but I wish all of you a wonderful day, a wonderful Shabbos, and I look forward to next time, learning together again.
I just have a quick question.